Hey, everybody. I have Chris Michael Harris with us today. We're going to talk about how to redefine success to serve you. Now, I may not stay along that path completely because Chris has a really interesting story I hope that we dive into, which has led him, though, to be the founder of Startup U, which is an interactive online learning platform that teaches entrepreneurs how to take an idea or an existing business and turn it into a highly successful and profitable company. He also really helps you build a thriving business, not just a business that is, you know, that you're reacting to things that happen, but how to actually create a scalable, sustainable business. He has his own experience in this. He's founded, bootstrapped, and scaled multiple startups to 7+ figures. And by the way, he's done this in his mid to late 20s. So I'm feeling old right now. Chris is also an entrepreneur in residence with Silicon Valley-based accelerator program, the Founder Institute, and is the host of Entrepreneur Hour, a podcast that has trended as high as top 5 worldwide on iTunes under business, health, and education. I've been talking way too much. I'm really happy to welcome Chris to the stage. How are you doing, good sir?
Welcome to the Live for Yourself Revolution, where our mission is to highlight stories of intrapreneurs and entrepreneurs who are truly living for themselves. I'm your host, Dr. Benjamin Ritter, leadership and career coach focused on guiding you toward a career and life you can love. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Doc, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Pumped that you're here. I'm pumped that you're a fellow Austinite. Is that the way to say it?
I saw it is. So okay. You must be new like me. I've only been here for 3 years.
Okay. So I feel like new and 3 years don't go together.
No, like they don't, especially okay. Here, because so many people move here every day that like after 2 weeks, you're like yesterday's news. But yes, I am in Austin as well. So we do share that Austinite label.
Awesome. And I've been here for about 10 months now.
Okay.
So I'm truly kind of shaking it off a little bit.
All right. I'll have to show you the ropes.
Oh yeah, please do. Please do. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, when a neighborhood gets a Target and a Whole Foods, I feel like now I'm in a neighborhood that's too developed. I need to go find somewhere else. Yeah. But so can you give our audience a little bit of an intro story on you?
Oh man, where to start?
Where to even start?
Right? Yeah, where to start
that? How about we start where you're at now? I'd actually appreciate that. Where do you spend most of your time?
Yeah, cool. So now, as you mentioned, I run Startup U, like Startup University, and it was just an idea that I had building several multiple, you know, 7-figure startups, like you mentioned. I found myself often saying, I wish I had known this 6 months ago. And I said, at some point, I'm going to build, you know, we don't learn the stuff that we learn in entrepreneurship. We don't learn that in higher education or any form of formal education. And so what I wanted to do, I feel like the failure rate in entrepreneurship is so high. So high. I mean, what is it, like 85% within 5 years don't make it. And very few after that actually make it too. So huge failure rate, and just kind of wanted to, having those experiences, very, very tough experiences, albeit successful, wanted to provide a resource for other people, because I truly believe this. I believe that individuals, many of us, have what it takes to build a successful business for our own. We just don't know the steps to take to do it. And so the problem is that you go through these periods where either you're staying stuck for too long, it leads to burnout, right? Or you get to the point where you start telling yourself, I'm just not good at this. And it's just the fact of the matter of, if you went in and started cutting somebody's head open doing brain surgery without having any knowledge of how to do so, you're going to fail a lot. You're going to mess up a lot of brains before you figure out what the hell you're doing. So maybe that's not a fair comparison, but a lot of people have what it takes. They have that burning desire to be successful running their own business. It's just the window to succeed, right? That long journey to succeed was far too long. And the fact of the matter is, people don't have, in many cases, the luxury, if you will, of going years without having success enough to leave their job. So we found people really stuck between job and business, making that transition, and then eventually just flaming out. It wasn't the fact that the business didn't have merit or the business didn't have, you know, market opportunity. It was the fact that literally you can't possibly stay in that no man's land, rock between a hard place area for the periods that people were spending that time in. So saw a huge opportunity, and that's kind of what we went for, but definitely fell into that backwards through the other experiences that I'd had.
Yeah. And I have to note, by the way, I was going to launch a business, didn't launch the business. And so I decided instead to do the best thing. And that was to go get my MBA and go to grad school. Oh, wow. Not the best thing, but it's just interesting decision in entrepreneurial management. Yeah. And it's like, I didn't learn anything about entrepreneurship in my graduate course for entrepreneurship.
I hate to hear that, but it doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
I've learned so much just starting businesses.
Right.
And be, you know, and getting out there and getting hungry and getting curious. And at the same time, ensuring that those ideas, and I learned this over time, are related to what I truly care about.
Exactly.
It's incredible. Just like you said, this is needed. There are people out there that are either going to burn out or give up.
Yeah.
And both options are not appealing. So right. How did you learn, like where did the motivation come from for you to launch Startup U? Because you had to have a story there.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, building that first business, we went from launch to 1.2 million in 36 months from my college apartment. And you talk about getting your, you know, you talk about getting your MBA. That was like getting my doctorate in entrepreneurship. I mean, you learn so fast. And so, like I mentioned, it was just that experience, the challenges of that experience, right? It's growing pains, not growing pleasures. And so I just was like, there has to be a way that I can help other people, right? To navigate this more seamlessly than what I've done. And it took a lot out of me. And that was part of my story is I had a major health crisis. There was a precancerous condition. And I'm convinced, albeit I can't prove this or I can't put a finger on this specific, but it's impossible for me to rule it out, that was a big part of it, right? That the stress of that build, the way I had to, or chose to rather, treat my body, right? For sacrificial reasons to grow said business. And so I'm confident that that had a lot to do with it. So we're making things harder than it has to be. And any good entrepreneur knows that any challenge presents an opportunity. And so I just looked at what's the opportunity here with these challenges I'm experiencing. And here we are.
Wow. I don't want to skip over I built this business in 36 months in my college apartment.
Sure.
Because I want to ask you more about that story. Before that, did you feel successful when you hit that $1 million mark?
No. And there's a variety of reasons as to why. The primary reason is because as entrepreneurs, sometimes we look at happiness and success as a destination, not as a journey. And so for me, many type A people, the first thing we do is we just move the goalpost, right? So we're having success. We reach a certain plateau. We've fixated on that number, right? Or that goal, whatever it is. And then you get there and you just move the goalpost back. And that's exactly what I did. I remember exactly where I was and who I was talking to when I realized we had just passed the 7-figure mark. And I remember immediately, I was like, okay, what about a billion? Like immediately I just moved the goalpost, not even a little bit, not like 5 million. I literally went to a billion. So no, I did not. I've had to learn how to enjoy the journey because it is, I always say this, but entrepreneurship is a lifestyle, it's not a career. And so you have to really embrace every aspect of it in every possible way. Because those wins, now I would appreciate it, right? But it would be part of the journey, not like, hey, we've arrived. You know, a lot of people do this with fundraising. You know, they raise money and then they go kaput because the goal was raising money. It wasn't building a sustainable business, right? So anyways, vanity metrics I tend to throw out, but yeah, I embraced the journey at this point. And at that point, I did not at all celebrate it.
Well, it sounds like during that time, well, what was the motivation to even start the business?
Yeah. So
I think that helps define where you feel successful at the same time.
Sure. So with any business, this is something we teach to our clients and our students alike is you want to really, for one, find something you're scratching your own itch. So find something in your life that you identify as a big problem, right? Like this is just crappy the way this works. Like this is just really not good. And it's really causing a lot of chaos in my own life, or it's just a burden, or it's whatever, right? So start there. And then make sure that you're in deep alignment with providing a solution to said problem, right? Whatever that problem entails. So I've always had an eye for that. Probably a God-given ability, I don't know, but I've refined it over time. But I lived in an apartment in downtown Athens, Georgia. I went to the University of Georgia. And I always joke and say this building was designed by a kindergartner with a crayon. It was just a terribly designed building and people were trying to move in and out of it. And it was just a big hassle. So we saw some girls, you know, long story, trying to move something huge, heavy, whatever. We helped. Mom tipped us like $50 a pop. So we went to the lease office manager and said, hey, we have something here, right? Light bulb went off for me, but that's a side hustle, not to, you know, go build a venture out of, right? Just to make some money over the summer. Well, next thing you know, we moved like 30% of that building and made like $10,000 in a matter of like 45 days. So I graduate, go on, brother keeps doing it. He was at Georgia as well, ended up doing $25,000. So I'm like, now we've got something. So abruptly quit my job, took it on full time. But to answer your question more specifically, it was just keeping an eye on the opportunity, what the opportunity was in front of me. I think many of us see opportunities somewhere in the world. And I always use this example, somewhere in the world, some guy is just cashing in or gal on a coffee sleeve, There's nothing sophisticated about it. It's just literally a piece of cardboard you wrap around your coffee cup to make sure you don't burn your hand. But it's a solution to a problem that people were experiencing. And there was a lot of market capture for that. And so many times I see people that are trying to get too cute or too fancy, and they're not really, they don't have a finger to the pulse of what are the real problems that people in the world are experiencing, and how do I provide a solution for that? So for me, it was problem solution. And then I just pursued it, and I immersed myself entirely to learn what people really wanted, what was going to be our differentiator in that industry. And fortunately, we were able to find that. And we were able to find a lot of alignment with what people it's good sometimes to be in a really crappy industry where things are done very poorly, because if you do anything, even a marginally better 5%, you blow people's minds. Like, nobody's innovating or disrupting the moving space. So we did that. And then soon we found opportunities doing furniture installation. So we're doing those in 32 states with 5 of the 7 major furniture manufacturers in the country, receiving furniture from China and Mexico and everywhere else, doing massive apartments and installing every piece of furniture in those fully furnished units. So things quickly took off, but it started with just identifying what the problem was in that market.
I feel like there's a piece missing in terms of we've just scaled so dramatically.
Yeah.
And like, as an entrepreneur, a college student just out of college, how did you learn? Do you have any support in the process as well to make this such as big of an organization as you created?
Oh man. So support in terms of like resources financially or mentors,
I think someone hears this and listens to this and goes, that is so out of my reach. this sounds like it just, naturally happened. This business fell on you. It's like, I did this one move and all of a sudden now I now have this $1 million business.
Right. So we've crystallized this now, and this is a large part of what we teach in Startup U is how to go through that process to really use. We've never had more access to more data than online than we do right now. Now, at this point, that's not what I did, right? I wasn't using this online information. I wasn't doing the things that I know to do now. And it's why we've been able to scale as quickly as we have with zero outside funding ever, right? However, at this point, what it was is I'm out in the field doing moves myself. I'm getting face-to-face contact with my customers and identifying what they valued and what we did. Now, here's the thing, and this is where people go wrong, right? What people do is they have an idea for a business. They immediately jump to, I love this thing. This baby is beautiful. They jump to creating content on social media, right? Creating all these assets, if they even do that, website, what have you. And what they fill that with, right, is what they think is cute and clever, what they think is valuable, what they think, right, people are going to buy, not what the market is dictating, right? So what we did, is we were out in the streets, downtown Athens, interviewing people, right? Asking them, hey, your move's coming up this summer. What are you planning on doing and why, right? Who have you used in the past? What did you like? What did you dislike about that? So really taking time to get in front of hundreds of customers, both during moves, but also not during moves. We were presenting and pitching to our classmates, getting feedback from them about their experiences. We went to sorority houses. I mean, we cleaned up with sorority. I mean, we were like the sorority movers that first official year. That was our primary source of revenue, because we went to all the sorority houses and we just got ample feedback. And many people, Doc, what they do is they want to skip the steps, right? Because and for a variety of reasons, and I'll say this is the overarching one that I've seen the most. People aren't afraid to pursue their dreams. They're afraid to be seen getting started, right? So when I was, here I am, I'm a graduate of a prestigious school. I mean, one of the best public schools, if not the best public school in the state of Georgia. I'm a college graduate, right? And now I'm out back in the field with wearing a t-shirt in the hot Georgia summer heat, moving college kids. And many customers made comments like, now when you grow up and you graduate, make sure you stay in school so you don't have to do this when you're done. And I'd have a mover with me because obviously I can't do it myself. And they would be like, this is his company. Like all embarrassed and red in the face, because the customers obviously was super embarrassed. But I feel like there's so many people, they don't give themselves permission. You can do the steps more efficiently, but you can't skip them. And so many people try to jump to the third, fourth iteration of what their business should look like versus being at, the local BNI chapter and meeting other business owners and getting themselves plugged into the local ecosystem. I always say this, you should hit $50,000 to $100,000 in revenue just from word of mouth referrals alone with zero advanced marketing skills or tactics whatsoever, right? So we make it harder when we say getting to six figures is like this big grandiose thing. We have clients to get to $10,000 in revenue without a single page, but a landing page. They have a website. They're barely even doing social media because they're doing the basics first. They're setting the foundation. They're making sure that they know this is what people want. And more importantly, they're taking the data that they receive, AKA the feedback from customers. And you don't take that and then put it in your own words and try to get cute and clever. You don't even have to be a good marketer or a good salesperson. You literally just regurgitate that on your marketing and sales assets or on your social media platforms in the words that they chose to use. So for example, if somebody said, I'm really struggling with Facebook ads. Well, I'm not going to go online and talk about, we help you with online advertisement. No, Facebook ads. They said Facebook ads. So I'm not going to go and regurgitate it in something different than what I was told. You regurgitate it in the voice. So when that happens, what they end up doing is they give a that's right response. So when somebody reads your marketing assets and they see you're regurgitating something at large that the market says, immediately you make a connection. And another example I'll give you, there's a tool called Squadcast. It's for recording podcasts like we're recording. And I remember I immediately signed up because they said, because no podcaster should be more worried about their tool stack than the interview itself. And I was like, they got it. They understand the market. I immediately signed up. It's those little things, right, that make a difference. And now the problem is 83% of people know within 3 seconds whether they're going to do business with you or not. So you have a small opportunity. Your hook has to be so on point, so dialed in, and your marketing language on your sales copy, whatever that sales copy or whatever that marketing copy looks like, whether that's on social media or on your website or wherever, your emails, you have to be dialed into your market and the words they use and the way they present their challenges and the way you present your solution. So that's really what we did, long story. And then it's just a matter of scaling that out. It's a matter of finding areas to find opportunities that already exist on the internet and tap into those opportunities, right? For me to go out and create, you know, all this traffic, generate all this traffic, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, that's not available for a startup business. But if we can tap into sources that already exist using the language that our customers actually use, you can siphon that off quickly. And what we found, and if I'm being totally honest, after we hit 100,000, 500,000, I couldn't even do any more marketing. We had zero paid marketing because we had tapped in so much, I couldn't take on any more business. I turned away $2 million of business in our third year. When we hit 1.2, I turned away 2 million because I just couldn't take on any more bandwidth. It's because we spoke our market's language.
Yeah, this is such gold for building and scaling a business, like consistently serving your customers and speaking their language. And I want to take a little bit of a pivot though, because you've built this business and you said, I did not feel successful. And so can you dive into that a little bit more? And when you knew that you weren't successful, because you said there were two options. If you're not value aligned, if you don't feel successful, either burn out or you give up. It doesn't sound like you give up.
So I think the thing is this, we tend to look, and this is I'll give you a couple examples here to kind of reiterate the point of this. When you tell somebody who you are, what's the next thing you say? What you do, right? It doesn't comprise anything else. It's, hi, I'm Dr. Ben, and this is what I do, right? Much the same in business. We tend to think growth in business with an equivalent dollar amount, right? We don't say, Chris, the guy that started this business and went from, you know, zero employees to 300 employees as the benchmark. It was zero to 1.2 what? $1 million in revenue, right? It's always the benchmark. And it's an appropriate one. You need to make money. Otherwise, it's a hobby. I'm not diminishing that. But there are multiple levers in the business that you need to pull. The reason I subjectively did not feel successful at that point is because when you're hanging on for dear life and you're scrambling because you've got revenue lags, right? We had huge revenue lags because we're down doing business with $100 million companies and we're absorbing their cash flow issues, right? So we didn't get paid. It was net 30 terms, meaning when you finish a contract, they pay you within 30 days. Well, we could go like net 180. I mean, it was real. So there were often times where I was owed $443,000 off of $1.2 million in revenue. So I'm really hurting. I'm in the hole and I'm still funding my operation with a low margin business. So how in the world could you feel successful if you're still scrambling to come up with $70,000 in payroll and you've got $20,000 in your operating account? You're not going to feel too successful. So the problem is that I fixated on being a good salesperson, right? I fix it. And a lot of us do that. Well, if I make money, it'll solve all the problems. And I'm not saying that it doesn't help, it does, but you also have to focus on organic growth. When I feel successful now, and I would have felt successful then, and I eventually started feeling successful in that business, was when I really, like I said, I focused on the journey, not this, you know, abstract goal, right? But then also focused on the little details. How do I make this work without me involved so that I can take some time off, so that I can focus on bigger picture stuff, so that I'm not caught up in the nuance of the day to day, right? That I'm not dealing with things that I shouldn't be dealing with anymore with a seven-figure business. How do I empower my team or put resources around me, right? So that we actually feel like we're growing. We felt like the same company, just making more money. We felt like a startup that was barely hanging on for dear life. So there was absolutely no way you could feel successful in that kind of a predicament or that scenario.
Yeah, I'm hearing safety and I'm hearing a little bit of security, but also how do you focus on the journey when we're so programmed? Like you said, I was a salesman. When you're so focused on closing business and making money, how do you pull yourself out of that? And what do you focus on?
So I think for one, and I love using the acronym SMART goals, or SMARTER, as Michael Hyatt has kind of amended that, but really being strategic about what your goals are, make them specific, make them measurable, make them actionable, right? Make sure that what you're doing, sometimes we sit down and we have a blank canvas. We're like, what's the goal? Well, it's in our head. We want to make $1 million. Okay, well, that's very vague. So how do we make that more specific? How do we make that actionable? And how do we bring that down to the simplest step that you can take, right, to get to that goal, to get to said goal? So for me, it's about strategy and planning now. It's about actually sitting down and saying, okay, what's my year going to look like? I have four major goals for the year. How do I arrive at those four major goals? And then which ones are the most important? Which ones do I take on first? Which ones are going to be the most impactful? Because if I do this one, it might take out like five others, just due to the fact it's going to be a domino effect. Those are the things that every day you're focused on. It's like people that appreciate soccer. A lot of people say soccer is boring, right? Like the final score is 2-1. Like not a whole lot going on. But the people that are soccer enthusiasts, they appreciate the game within the game. If you can play the game within the game, both with yourself personally, continue to augment yourself personally with both really strong keystone habits, getting better every day, refining your routines, getting better with your relationships, health-wise, everything else, but also with how you're navigating your success in your startup business, really being strategic in that sense, not just having abstract goals, which will drive you insane. That's where it gets fun. It's the game within the game that I start to embrace and enjoy, because that's where you start to see, that's like putting together the building blocks that just are spring-loading massive growth and success. If you do that, the byproduct of that will be rampant growth, not just selling your way to rampant growth.
And we don't listen to people that don't play. Like if they don't like soccer, we don't care about them. Obviously they've never played soccer. You know, yeah. I was a soccer player. So
nice.
I like that comparison.
It was a perfect metaphor for you then.
So this idea of abstract goals, and working with clients myself, you tend to find that people have these broad goals, mainly to protect themselves from having to take action. And so how can I accomplish this broad goal? It's so far out of my reach. There's so much that I have to do that I don't want to sit down and break that out. This is a generalization.
Right.
But can you speak to the fear at all that comes from like someone saying, I'm going to accomplish this, I'm going to work towards this business, and how you work with your students to help them confront that and have a little bit more confidence in becoming an entrepreneur, having it be their lifestyle, having the fact that one business may fail.
Yeah,
you know, two businesses may fail. Three businesses may fail,
right,
until one actually does.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in uncertainty leading to fear. And what I mean by that is I think people are so uncertain about what they're doing, and they've tried so many different things that don't work. Usually that starts with marketing. Like I'm doing all these things and I'm not getting clients. I'm trying all these things and I just can't sustain myself enough to leave my job. That's a level of uncertainty to the point that you start just throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And then that starts to leave you some toxic thoughts of this business isn't viable. The biggest thing that I can recommend is going back to what I mentioned before, is spending ample time. And it might sound very simple and basic, but it's not, I promise you. And I still do this. Anytime I launch a new product, anytime I launch a new program, anytime I'm launching a new business, it doesn't matter. I find ways to do one of two things. Interview 10 people face-to-face and say, when it comes to whatever your industry is going to entail, when it comes to moving, let's use that example, what is your single biggest challenge? And then shut up and let them explain what their biggest challenge has been, right? And then you can do some follow-up questions from there, but that's the most important one you want to start with. And then from there, you can build on that and ask other questions and get specific and ask about previous experiences and would you pay for a mover? What did you pay? Those are all really important things. But the single most important challenge that they've had right? That's the one you really, really, really want. 250, if you're going to do online surveys and, you know, doing like SurveyMonkey and stuff like that, 250 responses to discern the data if you're going to do it that way. Or 10 is what I've been taught, 10 face-to-face. You can do it via Zoom and record it. I promise you, if you've had a problem, even if you've already launched and you feel like you failed at this point and it's not working and you, whatever, I promise you, if you sit down and take advantage of that exercise, literally just 10 people that are, now make sure they're actually, this can't be mom, dad, brother, sister, and neighbor. These have to be potential real clients, potential real opportunities, right? Those people, for one, are going to give you amazing, really strong feedback. That's going to push you down a path that gives you a lot more clarity on the reasons that you failed. And, or if you haven't started, it's going to make you feel like, okay, I know where to go here. Like I have a general idea of what people want other than just guessing. That guesswork, that uncertainty, that's to me what really is a catalyst in the fear equation. And so that's going to really push you down the right path. And then from there, it's a matter of further discerning what you do with that data that you glean. But I promise you, you're going to have some common denominators that pop up. It's going to make you feel, this is a good example. Airbnb, I had Chip Conley on my show. He's basically Brian Chesky's the founder of Airbnb. Basically, Chip Conley serves as his right-hand man. He came on my show. We were talking about the hotel business, and because he was hotelier and then he got involved with Airbnb. And I said, was there a war like there was with Uber in the taxi business? He said, not at all. And I was like baffled by this. So I said, well, how? Like, how's that the case? And he said, the hotel chains could not figure out how we had a $21 billion valuation because they saw no discernible difference in their own numbers. They couldn't figure it out. But here's the deal. Airbnb got so dialed in on a couple of different aspects of that industry that were underserved. It was one, people that only traveled where friends and family lived. You know, if you have friends that live in Tampa, Florida, you go visit Tampa because you have a free place to stay, or you have family there, right? Or wherever that ends up being. Or people that didn't travel at all because now they have a place that they can afford and they can bring food and they don't have to eat out three times a day and all this and that. So they tapped into an underserved segment of the market. Now, here's the deal, Doc. Imagine if Airbnb started out and they didn't have that understanding. You talk about fear. Fear would be going against Hilton or all these IHG, right? All these massive hotel chains that are literally powerhouses that are all over the world. And you're trying to start a business to compete with those people? So people are like, oh, the market's saturated. No. You haven't figured out the opportunity in the space because no matter how big someone is, Amazon, let's take Amazon, perfect. Second largest company or employer in the world now and has gained so much market share since, you know, COVID. There's still something left to be desired. Despite the fact that they have as much market share as they have. Apple, same thing. There's still something to be left desired. And we live in a world of abundance, none more so now in the age of the internet. So your job is to literally not look at the competition and get fearful if there's not enough opportunity. It's for you to dig enough, cut those layers deeper into the onion to figure out what that opportunity entails. And I can't state it enough. And it maybe sounds too simplistic for a lot of people to be like, this can't be real. I promise you, if you take the time to get to know who your market is, what's missing, what they want, and position yourself in accordance with that, you are going to experience traction.
So many powerful threads in what you're saying. Once again, this idea of switching from into an abundant mindset instead of a scarcity mindset. At the same time, also, fear tends to be personal. So if you can get outside of yourself and get out of your own thoughts and you break that cycle through these interviews and through these conversations and through data, it's sure. A good way to to basically just take away that fear. I can hear other people though saying, but how do you get people to take surveys? I can't go just ask somebody.
Right.
Don't I need permission to go reach out? And how do I find these people? What do I have to offer them?
That's a great question. The key is to ask for advice because everybody wants to give advice. Everybody cares about their opinion. Hey, I need advice on this. And then honestly, I promise you could probably post that on your personal social media right now, even on Facebook, whatever, and say, hey friends, I need advice on something. And don't be really specific as far as what you're asking. Just say, I need advice about moving. Have any of you ever moved before? I promise you have people be like, oh yeah, I moved, or they'll tag friends or this and that. And you only need 10. So it's really good. I also want to highlight something you said, because I think it's really important. You're talking about the learning aspect of things. Something that I found extremely validating is not just listening to podcasts, which is great, by the way. I'm not diminishing that. I think it's fantastic. But it has to be total immersion. Like I mentioned before, entrepreneurship is a lifestyle. It's not a career. You don't turn it on and off. You have to become an entrepreneur. And in so doing, you need to be reading and following other people, reading their books, going through their programs. All these things are going to validate and help you. And probably many of you have already done this that are listening. Hopefully, that's my goal here, right? That are watching or listening, is you maybe feel a little bit, maybe you've been down, you maybe feel like a little spark just from hearing me say, like, you're making it harder than it has to be possibly, or this is all you have to do. Like those things, I feel like that validation, either to what you're doing or what you're not doing, it still moves you closer to the ultimate goal, which I think helps reduce some of that fear. So I wanted to highlight you said that because I think it's a really, really, really valid point.
And just this idea of that it's a process, that the lifestyle again.
Right.
That your expectation shouldn't be comparing yourself to individuals that, you know, I think something you said in a different show is this idea, someone has 1 million followers, they must be successful. You have no idea what's going on in that person's business.
Most of them and, are broke.
Yeah. And you shouldn't even just be comparing yourself to others in general, because this is your journey and your story.
Right.
And sort of understand that, okay, it's going to take like those interviews, you know, that those interviews may take some time to get to 10 in-person interviews. It might not take that long, but let's say it takes you a month. Okay. So that's a month that you spent doing some great stuff to build your business and gathering data. And if you're comparing yourself to how much money did I earn this month, then you're not going to feel good about yourself.
Right. Yeah, that's so, the heavy lifting part, you know? So if it did take you a month from there, it's just implementing it. And it's like, wow, you're going to really start to experience. So I would echo that. If it did take you a long time to do those, that's totally fine. Because that's the work. That's the sharpen the axe before you swing aspect of doing it.
Okay. One more question just to round everything out. In terms of prioritization, because a lot of people say, oh, I have a full-time job. I have all this stuff going on.
Right.
I want to do this and I can see how to do it. I have clarity. I understand why. I see my market, but how do I make time for it?
Got it. Okay. So I have two pieces of advice. I give this advice often. One of which is not my own. One of which is my own methodology. The first is read the book, The One Thing by Gary Keller. Gary Keller is the founder of Keller Williams, a massive real estate company, actually here where we are in Austin. Fantastic, because he experienced much the same that I experienced, which was just crazy burnout from just trying to juggle all the things and do all the stuff, right? That really gives you a mechanism to figure out what's the most important. Not all of the things. And that's the problem with entrepreneurship. There's never going to be, there's an endless list of to-dos, right? You don't enter into a job and you get a resume, you know, your job description, and here's the 10 things you do. And that's what you do. And it's always the same until you get promoted. And then you have a new set of things or a different set of things. As a business owner, we have to divorce our taskmaster, is what I say. Because you have to adopt a different mindset. It's not about doing all the things. You're never going to get to do all the things. It's about what's the most important thing and what's the one thing right now. Doesn't mean the other things aren't, you know, there's no forever. It just means no right now. And so read that book. If you feel like that, I promise you, you're going to immediately like be like, oh my God, this is what I was looking for. This is so great. It really gave me a lot of peace. It's probably the best way to put it when I read that book, because I was really, really, really just pushing hard at all, on all fronts, burning at both ends of everything. The second thing is what I call, and this one is something that I mechanized for myself that I'd love for your audience to borrow if they'd like to. It's called my PAID process. So it's an acronym. It stands for prioritize, automate, delegate, eliminate. I know it's PADE, not PAID, but you get the idea. So the exercise is this. You start with and I recommend doing this on Trello if you use something like that, because you can drag and drop things and modify it as you go and stuff like that. But if you want to write it down, you can write it down too. What you do is your first list is everything that you do in your business, everything. And you can include your job too, if you're still in your job. Then for 2 weeks, you're gonna use something called Toggle Track. Okay, it's T-O-G-G-L, track. And what it does is it helps you track time spent on certain things that you're doing in your life and in your business or wherever. The reason I want you to do that is because we need to measure where we're spending our time, not subjectively guess. Because odds are, if you're like, I spend like 5-10 minutes a day creating social media content, the reality of it is when you actually consider all of the subcomponents of doing that, you're probably spending more like 30 to 40 minutes. So right there, we've got a huge margin for error on your actual time bandwidth for that specific day, let alone that week or that month, right? So we lose a lot of time unnecessarily, or we don't realize we're spending it on things that maybe we shouldn't be spending it on. So let's make that entire list. And then the things we do, use Toggle and literally time yourself, like a stopwatch. We have to have a starting point. We have to see where we are. Then what we're gonna do is this. When you actually analyze those, you're gonna say, okay, P stands for prioritize, right? That's the first one in the acronym. We are going to focus on the things that are A, what's the one thing, what's the most important thing, but also what's the thing that you love doing the most that only you can do in the business that's going to have the biggest return on the investment, right? Now, it's not going to be ideal at first. It's going to have a lot of things on there that are nonsense that are, you're like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. And that's great. We're going to get to that. But first, let's put that list together. And it could be a lot of things. We're going to narrow it down eventually. The next step is A, which is automate. And the problem here is a lot of people skip. They go from P to D, which is delegate. They skip the automate part. So I see this often. People will be doing all these things for a long period of time. And everybody's been telling them they need to hire a virtual assistant, or they need to make a hire, or you get somebody part-time, get an intern. And they get so desperate that they just bring somebody on. And then guess what? They didn't bring them on appropriately. There was no training. There was no system in place. There were no tool. There was nothing. It was just information in your brain of things you were doing. And that person is not given a fair chance to succeed. So they don't succeed. And then you tell yourself, you reinforce the fact that, see, only I can do this. And then you go back to trying to do it all yourself again, right? And people stay really, really stuck. And that's a path to burnout real quick. So automate is this. Your first hire should be your tools. There are things in your business, like Dr. Ben and I today, there was a scheduling process. I scheduled and boom, that was it. It showed the availability and here we are. And there was a link that was automatically sent. There was no reason for us to go back and forth 20 times trying to figure out a date, sending links back and forth. It's nonsensical. So that alone goes from probably 15 emails to maybe one email or two emails. That's a lot of bandwidth that Ben created, right? A lot of people skip that step. So you're going to be creating systems to A, get stuff off that, off of your list so you can focus on prioritizing, but then not just dumping stuff on somebody's lap. Then we get to D, which is delegate. Then when we're making money, then we've created some bandwidth. Then when we're a little bit more profitable, we focus on getting a virtual assistant. You can get a virtual assistant in the Philippines for $2 to $3 an hour, a cup of coffee an hour. And you don't even have to hire them full time. You could hire, we started out hiring somebody 5 hours a week. You can do the math. If you cut one little habit, like your morning latte at Starbucks, you've now paid for a virtual assistant to do 5 hours. Think of 5 hours worth of work in your business. That's a long time. Slowly, you give them more hours and they become full-time if you get to that point and if you deem that's appropriate. But we're going to get to that later. And it's usually things that you can't automate that only a person can do, but it's on your prioritized list that you're like, yeah, why am I spending 8 hours a week on this? That's why we measured it, right? Because now we need to know how much time is spent and we know how many hours we should hire somebody for. Because if you don't measure it and you're creating a job and you say 5 hours a week, but you have 12 hours allocated, that's an unreasonable ask. So you'll know exactly how many hours to allocate towards a virtual assistant when you have that data to refer to. And then finally, I'm sorry being long-winded here. I think this is really important though. I hope people get a lot of value out of it. If you take nothing else from this conversation, but the last one is E, which is eliminate. So like I mentioned before, no sometimes means not right now, not no forever. But what we want to do is we want to move things over that we want to get to at some point. We want to do at some point, maybe it's Facebook ads, or maybe we really want to be on TikTok, or maybe we want to do a podcast like we're doing here right now. But right now, based off of this, based off the bandwidth, both yourself, your tools, your virtual assistant or your intern or whatever it looks like, it just doesn't make sense. But we want to move it in that E category of eliminate because we can refer back to it. And sometimes what I recommend people do is they put a due date, right? So I like Trello, put a due date on that card. Because then it reminds you, hey, I want to refer back to this quarter one of next year. I'm going to put it for January 15th of, 2022. So I know it's not just something I forgot about. There was this thing in my brain at one point. It's something that you have an actual date that you're going to refer back to and say, we're going to plan on bringing on TikTok or we're going to launch that podcast around January. So I want to give myself a reminder to like reconsider that. And then that way you can start working towards that goal. So I think if you use that mechanism, and I use it often, by the way, so like I'll get out of in a rut, or I'll kind of get a little stuck, or I'll get behind on work, or I feel like I'm taking on new things and my bandwidth is stretched. I'll go back to that for doing that for like a week or 2 weeks and redefine my schedule, keep tweaking it, keep modifying it. And usually what I find is there's a lot of waste that I find and a lot of things I need to get off my plate and or new positions I need to hire, new things, whatever the case may be, or things I need to eliminate. So I think it'll really help people if you follow that from time to time, maybe once or twice a year.
I think I keep using the word that was gold. I don't know. Maybe I should say that was.
Well, it's better than a lot of alternatives. Platinum. So thank you.
That was wonderful. Yeah. I think this also will help a lot of people. Entrepreneurs tend to be high achievers. I think it's sure. A classification of someone that just, they get an idea, they execute. At least entrepreneurs that have created something in the world. The problem with that is when you start growing, you have a lot more to do.
Yep.
And but you have no system of prioritization other than this mindset that this needs to get done now.
Right.
Which is the recipe for burnout and constant stress.
Yeah, entrepreneurs are the ultimate. Putting as a type A in an entrepreneurial endeavor is the perfect storm for a lot of bad things to happen, because all of the best things about us are it's great. They're magnified, but all the worst aspects of us are also magnified, and it can become a really toxic environment. I've experienced it myself, and I have people call me like almost every day or email and be like, I'm really in a bad place. Can you help me? I'm feeling burned out. And it usually it's like this. If you don't measure things, I'm a huge biohacker. So I'm talking measure every, I love numbers, right? I love data. I measure my health data. I have a smart bed. I wear all these devices. I mean, I'm crazy when it comes to data and, you know, mechanisms like the paid process, because if you don't have it, it's like driving around without looking at the gauges in your car. You know, you're going to end up with an overheated engine on the side of the road at some point. It's just going to happen. And a lot of us are doing that in both our business and our personal lives, and it can be real nasty. And again, I'm speaking from experience on that.
Yeah, I was actually just looking at some new smartwatches because it's Prime Day. I was just like, I need to go track some.
Yeah, Amazon has their own now. Their own like smartwatch kind of health device. Yeah. I don't recall what it's called, but it's like $3 a month or something.
Yeah, I need to explore some wearables. I might hit you up and ask you about that in the future and what you're tracking.
The Garmin Vivo Smart 4 is bang for buck, probably the best one that I'd recommend to get started. I've tried a lot of them. I have a Whoop now. I've done Aura. I've done all these different things. I have a BioStrap, which is another company. But the Garmin Vivo Smart, if you're not hugely sophisticated with this stuff, is the perfect tool for entrepreneurs. I still wear it, even though, you know, a little bit more sophisticated now. It's still fantastic bang for buck.
That's really good to know. And I know I said that was the last question, but I'm really curious, how do you find balance, and what is it that you do invest your time in to get out of the grind and get out of the work?
Yeah. So the one thing you will learn, and this was, again, freedom, right? This piece, this book will give you, I promise you, is he talks about this idea of counterbalance. And so we have this false narrative of striking this like harmonious balance in our lives. We're like, you know, we're one with the force, right? If you're a Star Wars fan, you get my reference. That is not only not feasible, but it also removes the strength and power of entrepreneurs, because we really, one of the reasons why we're successful at what we do is because we do go crazy in extremes, is because we do wake up at 3 a.m. with that new idea. It's because we can't put our work down. It's because we're obsessed with making it work. I have not talked to a single entrepreneur, nor have I experienced success in any of my businesses where I didn't have that degree of like just wanting to get it, right? Like just desperate. Now here's where counterbalance comes into play. It's self-awareness to recognize I'm really going to sprint here, right? This next 2 months, I'm really going to sprint because I have a new launch, or I really want to get to a certain revenue threshold so I can leave my job. Again, you're going to know that from your goals and from reading The One Thing. You're going to know exactly what that needs to be. You're going to want to put things in place, A, along the way, right? So you're going to have to commit to, I have date night on Fridays because I can't just neglect my significant other. I'm going to commit to doing 30 minutes every day of something fun. It can be video games. It can be whatever. And I'm going to do something outdoors, like, because a lot of us are just very sedentary. We're inside all the time. And largely a lot of us, actually COVID related, last statistics I saw, 8 out of 10 people that are being hospitalized for COVID are vitamin D deficient and magnesium deficient, by the way, but vitamin D specifically. We're indoors too much. We don't get outside. So I'm outside all the time. We live in Austin. Austin's an outdoor place. It's great. So I go jet ski every single week, non-negotiable during those warmer months, which for us, fortunately, is a lot. But I'm out. I go out every Thursday. I'm out on my jet ski, getting outside, getting away, detaching, doing what I need to do. So put those things in your life. Understand yourself. A lot of people are their own worst enemy. You know, it's like they see Jocko Willink, and I love Jocko. I'm not taking anything away from Jocko, but you don't have to get up. Because he gets up at 4 a.m. that works for him, doesn't mean that's what you have to do. Right. And we tend to be like drill sergeant. This is what I have to do. And I have to push my way through it. And I'm not saying that pushing is not a good thing, but you need to make sure you understand yourself, how you operate best. And in many cases, treat yourself with the same grace that you would treat one of your employees. Cause many times we don't, many times we put ourselves through the ringer more than we would ask anybody else to do that. So I tend to be an asset, an ally to myself, not my own worst enemy, because I'm focused on longevity. So for me, it's counterbalance and knowing those things. One of the other things I do that's really, really important is I'll do either a staycation or a vacation every single quarter, right? I take a week off. And I really recommend, not only for the sake of recharging the batteries and getting a fresh perspective and taking some time off, but here's what's going to happen. And you know this if you've been in the trenches and really working on something for a long time. The more you do that, the more the tunnel vision happens. The more you you're missing things, profound things, potentially game-changing type things. You're missing them because you're so caught up in the nuance. You're so caught up in the hustle. You're so caught up in the grind of doing what you're doing that you're starting to miss really obvious things. And usually when you change an environment or you're away from a while and you're sitting on the beach, or it can be literally, you can get an Airbnb in your own town. Like, you can go rent a bedroom and spend $20 for the weekend. I mean, it literally can be that simple. I'm not expecting people to go spend thousands of dollars to do this every quarter, but take some time to gain some perspective. Focus on impact, not time spent. Divorce your taskmaster. Because think of this, if you could do 27 things that all maybe move the needle forward 5%, or one thing that moves it forward 150%, what's most important, right? What's most important? It's that one thing. So that's what we want to focus on. And sometimes you gain that. I gain all kinds of insights. I'm sorry I'm being long-winded here, but I think this is important for people. On my way home sometimes from jet skiing, or out while I'm on the jet ski, or I'm on the lake, or I'm kayaking, or I'm doing whatever, something outside of my environment. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how have I been missing this whole time? How? And I come back and it's like, boom, I'm on it the next day. So really, again, focus on counterbalance, but focus on things that are going to be good for you. Work with yourself, be the asset to yourself, because those are the moments you're going to experience those epiphanies and those breakthroughs. They're going to make that monumental leap forward, not just every day just grinding, which again is valuable, but you want to also put those areas and that bandwidth in place for you to have those insights.
Our brains keep working on things when we're not in front of them. Mm. And I think often clients I meet with, they forget that they need to zoom out.
Yes.
Get a perspective on things.
Exactly.
They need to actually get out of town, because when you're doing something like jet skiing or painting or running, your brain is still working on the things that you're stuck on
right.
in the background. Mm-hmm. And you're able to be more creative because you're not actually working on them with your limiting beliefs that you'd have if you were focused on them.
Right.
And with that tunnel vision, like you said. So that's such a powerful piece of advice. Yet again, some more gold. I am rich. Our audience members are rich. They are unbelievably wealthy from this episode and from your wisdom.
Thank you.
Where can they learn more about you? How do they go get more?
Yeah. So all of our social media at HeyCMH. And I do have a resource for people that are listening. I know largely there's a lot of people in this audience that are new to a startup or considering leaving, and maybe they are in that level of uncertainty. Like, I've never done this before. I have responsibilities. I have kids and a mortgage and all these various things. So we put together a resource, and actually we are launching a free class, and it's going to be how to get your first 100 customers in 100 days. Without breaking the bank, even if you're starting from scratch, right? So if that title alone does get you excited, I don't know what else I could tell you to get excited. But you can start with early bird registration for that by going to uscdownload.com. USC stands for Ultimate Startup Checklist. So it's like a 7 or 8 page PDF. It's literally everything you need to be doing and ticking off those boxes to make sure that you're giving yourself the best chance of success in your startup business. When you join that, when you grab that PDF, you're automatically going to be on the list to receive access to that class when it goes live. And we are anticipating it's going to be live in the next week or two. So you'll get instant access to that. So that's the best piece of advice I can give you. USC, like Ultimate Startup Checklist, download.com. And then I do have one last ask of your audience, if I may, Ben.
Yeah, please do. And just to reiterate, that was uscdownload.com.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Ultimate Startup USC Checklist. USC, there you go. uscdownload.com is where to go. But one thing I do want to ask of you guys, and I appreciate Ben so much for allowing me to come and speak to you and provide information, what have you. This is what I do. I do this all day, every day. I love it. I wouldn't do anything else in the world if I could. But you don't see a lot of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. A lot of the editing and management and publishing and preparation and all these various aspects of what running this part of it looks like, running this content for free so that you can get value out of it. So if you could do me a favor, it's literally gonna take you 27 seconds. And if it's more than that, I promise, tag me on social media and be like, Chris is a liar and everything he said was total nonsense. I'm giving you permission to do that, all right? Whatever podcast app or whatever it is you're listening, here from, or whatever podcast app you use, do Dr. Ben a quick favor. Hit subscribe and leave a review. You can literally just say great chat. Doesn't have to be anything substantial. The reason is because that's how podcast apps judge and determine whose shows they should feature. And so one of the reasons my show took off, Startup U Podcast took off, is because we were able to do that really quickly. We hit new and noteworthy, and I grew a huge audience. So please help Dr. Ben for providing. If he's provided value to you, I'd love for you to, it's like leaving a tip for your waiter or your waitress, and it's 100% free. You don't have to pay anything to do it. Go to the show, subscribe, and leave a review. Those are the two most important factors you can do to help his show trend and reach more people.
Free gifts and also amazing advice. Now, this is where handwritten notes do not serve better. So the electronic reviews, also superb. Thank you for saying that. And thank you for, you know, inviting our audience members to do that. And if they find your show, they should also do the same for you, because hey, they're in a review kick and it feels good to give it back and give forward.
I mean, I'm not going to be upset about it.
And so thank you again so much for your time and amazing freebies. This will all be in the show notes for our listeners to take advantage of. And I hope to see you around Austin.
Let's do it, man. Let's get some tacos or something. I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
You've been part of the Live For Yourself Revolution. If you've enjoyed today's episode, make sure to share with a friend and spread the good word. Till next time, keep on living for yourself.